before we turn it over to the next session, I thought it would be a good idea to have a discussion, a rather general, I mean, not quite free-form discussion about what we heard this morning. And so what I did was I wrote down some questions that were pretty, actually, there's a little bit of feedback. I wrote down a set of very, what I would consider top-level questions. Some of them are pointed, but I think this is the group that is best qualified to answer them. So what I'll do is for each of the talks, go through a set of one or two questions just to start the discussion going. And I want to actually call on some of the speakers to address the questions first and then open it up to other people. Do I need to be standing near that? Are you going
to? I will try to do my best.
Okay.
Don't worry about me.
Here, I can stand over here.
Okay.
That way you don't have to pose with a Phoenix book. All right. Okay. So the first talk we heard was from Danielle Singh. And I wanted to go back and actually revisit something that was done in 2013 and look at what's going to be happening not only with LIGO, but with Virgo and also with CAGRA. I don't have a slide for that. So these are the two plots that were put in the observing scenarios document, which has now been revised quite a few times. But I guess the question I'm going to ask first of Danielle is, given what we know now, is this still a realistic goal to be getting to design sensitivity by 2019? And I don't know, where's Danielle? Who knows? You're gonna say who knows?
Yes.
Well, but we put this. Okay, all right. But we put this down, you know, in 2013. You know, we said we think we could live with this. So do we know anything more that says we can't do? You're saying that there's nothing right now. There's still some unknowns, but there's nothing to prove that we can't do it. Anybody? Is there anybody else who wants to comment on that question?
What about the laser?
What about the laser?
My lasers.
Yeah. I don't think the laser is a big issue.
I mean, the one in hand would actually work with full power, but it's not possible. Don't worry about the
laser. Yeah. Okay, good. So hearing that from an expert like Danielle makes me feel pretty good. Brett, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're moving in the right direction for a question, but one of the problems I have is I think that what's happened since 2013 is the legends that lead us to translate those curves into ranges and make assumptions on the ranges is past its surface.
Yeah.
And what we need to have is some reasonable multiple metrics, not too many, but you know, the story for black holes and the story for neutron stars is different.
Yeah.
And the priority for black holes and the priority for neutron stars as we move forward is going to be different.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, what we need to start to concentrate on is where you push to get those curves scientifically and politically. You know, for instance, if we ever want advanced facilities as opposed to advanced detectors,
yeah,
we're going to need a lot of support from the astronomy community,
right,
which happily have come to believe in black holes even before our discovery. Some of us remember when they didn't believe them. You know, they've had a 400-year love affair with matter. And if we don't show neutron star physics, we're not going to have their support for advanced facilities.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of making a game plan, we have to start to bifurcate between black holes and neutron stars.
Is there anything we should be doing differently? And this comes up actually even later in one of my slides. Is there anything we should be doing differently now that we're not doing based on that, you know, that observation, which I think is a correct one, that you know, that we might have to make some choices down the road. I personally don't see anything that we'd be doing differently now.
Yeah, well, to some extent, what you do in commissioning is, you know, you move toward the light, right?
You
You're looking for the high heads, right? So that's what people are doing. So I don't think we're making mistakes, but if we're trying to plan further in the future, we need to consider two different things to look at.
And I think it becomes really important when you get to a facility, for example. Ray, did you want to?
Well, no, I think there is a point.
It's right.
Everybody knows that I worry about the suspension. I know that the basketball group thinks I'm a terrible bastard for thinking about that.
This is the kind of discussion I was hoping to foster.
Look, I wish we had, you don't have to think about it. I wish the hell it removed it back. But are we planning in case there isn't? Okay, that's one thing. And I think there are two things that relate to what Fred just said. And that is that if you now make black holes the centerpiece of what we put on our estimating plots for the future, and we look at the science that comes out of it, which is clearly going to happen for a while. The low frequencies take more precedence than they did before. But it's not so simple. We've got to find out if there are problems at low frequencies that are due to things that we don't know about in all the systems. And it could be looked at the suspension. I hope they're not in trouble. Frankly, I just wish that there's no problem. We want to hope that we're not sure. So we have to plan in case they're due.
Well, you're saying that becomes a commissioning resource question, in the sense that if you've got two problems, one directed towards low frequency, one directed towards, you know, getting a better rate for finding neutron stars.
You could see some of the work that was done by the group at Lana when they had very nice, this lovely Jacobian that they put together, which is probably a little more careful than it needed. But the thing is, there you could see what advantages you would get for, example, looking at the equation. Say, all the stuff going on in the band around 400, well, let's say above 200 hertz, that's where the action was.
Right.
And a lot of it, and here the action is that people say it's below 100 hertz and around 30 hertz. So I guess all I want to say that. So we've got to think what, and all these things are being tried, for example, the idea of trying to get rid of the Newtonian noise. If you think the Newtonian noise has something to do with what's going on between 50 hertz and 100 hertz, I don't think it does, but if it does, it's an important thing to look at. Yeah. The only one I know of that would be where we might be in trouble is where we have things that could make noise in that band. And that includes the optical coatings, which, you know, we hope we're right with that curve, that curve that's been shown all the time. I think it's a pretty good bet that we are, because experiments of both the Caltech and MIT have shown that they're not that far from that curve. Then there must be something else that's mechanical. We've already started looking at the electronics noise. It doesn't look like it. I mean, people look very hard. Is it the electronics noise that somehow is doing this? So anyway, you've got to be prepared. I can't give you a whole line of things. But as you say, there ought to be high frequency performance thing that goes to one of the sources, the low frequency performance thing that goes to the others. And we've got to work on both sides.
Good. Sorry. No, it's a good point. Matt, I think, wanted to say something.
Yeah, so I guess I wanted to offer somewhat of a counterpoint to this, which is both neutron stars and black holes care about the sensitivity between 80 hertz and 100 hertz. I mean, right exactly where we're looking for our extreme noise is where we've been for basically all of the sources. So I don't think we should split our attention too much.
Okay.
Things which roll down is after the fourth are not going to be a decision for our problem. We already know that. So we should, we should think about low frequencies, but also worry about what you mean by low frequencies. If you mean 10 to 20 hertz,
no.
We're not worried about it. But some people would say low frequency is 10 to 20 hertz. So that's 20 hertz.
I was quite sharp about what I said. But
whereas
100 to 550 is about.
Yeah, so 50 to 100 is really mid-band, and that's where we're looking for everything. Most, there are a lot of things you can rule out, and the slope is just wrong. So I think it's one thing you should keep in mind.
It's not even at minus two, probably.
Ish, or maybe two, but not more than that. That actually rules out whole enormous classes of things. You can't make late springs on the balance, but mass cause that. The other point I wanted to make was just sort of a subtle change to the question you asked about whether or not it's, will we achieve design by 2019. I would say there's some hope that we might get to that curve or something like it, or maybe I would say something better. By that date, we might not do it in the way that was originally planned. And of course, what I'm thinking of is that if we are using squeezing these interferometers, we could actually have quantum noise at that level with less power, or if we managed to get all of 100 watts going in, we could have better quantum noise. We might get to the design curve by that date. We might not get there the way we intend. Of course, that's not really important, but I think we should keep this as an important thing. Maybe the high power doesn't work out, but we thought about this. We thought about squeezing as risk mitigation. We're ready for it. Maybe that's what we'll do. In any case, we hope to be at that sensitivity, maybe not in that way.
So Matt turned my question around. So if we solve the low frequency stuff and we get squeezing, we'll do better.
It's not crazy. Let me just defend myself. I have to agree with Matt, but let me just say what was on my mind. I mean, I know what you're thinking is to detect the neutron star, you need everywhere.
Yeah.
But if you want to do science with a neutron star,
you need high frequencies. You need high frequencies.
You've got to do the high frequencies. That's all I was trying to say.
Okay. Quickly, Brian, do you want to pass the. And then I'm just warning you that I'm going to put Giovanni on the spot because I'm going to ask the same question. We could do it, it might even be harder.
Yeah. Dave, I think these curves are great, but I think we should also make sure that we remember that the duty cycle of the glitch rules are extremely important. And I don't want those to get forgotten, things like focusing on curves.
I think it's very important.
Yeah, duty cycle, I don't want to cut it. It would be better to be running twice as much, twice as frequently as we were before. It would be better to do 10% better in the 50%.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think the trades that we need to remember to leave on the data when we're allocating commission.
And I agree with you about glitches, although glitches weren't really a problem. We had a big glitch source. The duty cycle is something that's kind of near and dear to me. It's kind of my job. Try to work on that. It's a long haul process to improve the duty cycle. Right? It has to do with having a large number of trained staff so that people don't burn out. And it actually, to some extent, is in opposition to the approach that I think most people in this room are pushing, which is to be somewhat minimal and improve the detection that we can. Because every time the thing changes, it takes a training problem, an engineering problem. A new set of techniques being developed for diagnosing and monitoring things, and so to get the staff to the point where they can have a support a very large duty cycle, to some extent causes pain and suffering to the process of commissioning because it restricts their frequency, and so it's not they're not separable so easily.
So there's Peter, and then we'll go to, and I'll ask the question to you.
So on that topic, what do you think is a reasonable, like, long-range, duty cycle that we'll be able to get with the micro detectors, Virgo, Tiger, and so on? Those of us who analyze the data are very curious about this part because we have to figure out which networks, which sub-networks we should plan on analyzing and how much we gain in each of them.
So there can't be any confidence.
I know.
You ask me a question, I get the answer.
43% is loaded down to one.
I think I've always felt taking if you want to, you can tell me they're card carrying Bayesians. Just look at the prior. The prior is how well we did in S5 and S6 and O1. Those are your priors. We want to improve that. We need to do things differently. Now at O1 was lower. Because, the first run with a new brand new detector, I think we'll be able to do a little better than that. My guess is that in terms of the double coincidence duty cycle, getting to 50%, which is what we ran for 2 years during S5 in the winter is probably doable, and then maybe 10% higher in the summer. Of course, we tend to run in the winter. So. That's my guess.
So I think that the project doesn't matter at large. Also carefully quantify what we're winning. Right? If you're working on commissioning, you're winning in sensitivity cubes. So you're going to figure it. If you're working on a duty cycle, you're not winning your task, you're winning linearly in the duty cycle. My listening duty cycle. So once you push beyond about 80% of the individual detectors, you're not winning your task.
Yeah. So really, I'm wondering if we're going to hit 80% or whether we're going to be.
Yeah, so
I mean, you shouldn't talk about 80% for double coincidence.
No, double coincidence, no. Single detector 80% is probably the best you can do without going crazy alert breaks and things like this, and two-day maintenance. So if you're trying to set expectations, that's probably a reasonable one. They won't be independent between two tankers because of breaks and things like that. But I don't really see there's ever going to be a strong drive to push the coolants in recycle very far beyond 50% even if we could. So if you get to 70%, then you're just, we get very little left to win on that. So anyway, I think that it's something where you should look at how much time you lose and how much commissioning time you lose in particular. And you find the time volume product is generally favors the commissioning of the recycle. And just also, we put another point out there. Virgo recycle, I think, is much better than that.
Yeah,
recycle. And so it's not, and it's a very complicated system. So it doesn't mean necessarily the complexity leads to a recycle. You have to consider the instrument you have, which lie detectors that have any stacks, which cause a lot of problems, and you can move off to recycle. This was the first time we run this instrument, we had a little recycle. So anyway, it's not crazy. People get to 80% of the recycle.
Okay. Can I ask now the same question of Giovanni? If I'm putting you on the spot, tell me I am, and you don't have to answer. But you guys have designed by 2021, which is 5 years from now, installing these detectors. You're going to be running an O2, not with fibers, but with wires. You'll probably hit, my sense is, you'll probably hit your conservative, the goal of the blue band there. What do you know? Can you even answer the question? How do you.
You're asking if it's reasonable that we get the design sensitivity in 2021. I think that 5 to 6 years is reasonable. We have three issues along this path. Two are technology issue, one is a design issue. So the technology issue, well, the first one is the one with more easy suspension, but I'm confident that this will be solved. On a short time scale. The second one is that design sensitivity is there needs 200 watts laser, which still is not available, or a combination of a lower input power plus a squeezer. So currently we are preparing a squeezer, which hopefully will be ready for installation between O2 and O3, and at the same time we are still working on getting more power, more laser power. So these are the two technology problems. The third one is the main concern for me. It's a design issue, and it concerns the fact that Virgo, advanced Virgo, has marginally stable cavities. So we still, since the interferometer is not completely locked, we still have not experienced the real impact of this design choice. We have a thermal compensation system which on paper is capable of coping with these thermal operations. It's redundant both in sensing and actuations. And so, learning to exploit all the potential of the thermal compensation system will require time, and we'll see what happens when the power is increased. The good news is that the quality of the mirror is very good, so the cold, the aberration associated with cold effects will probably be less than expected, but only when we commission the power recycling cabinet with the reasonable power, we will be able to understand whether these can slow down the process towards practices.
And remind, what's the power you're going to be operating with too? For when you guys start?
You know, 225 watts.
Same as wireless.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I quickly ask, how are you thinking about power packages?
Yeah, honestly, we didn't think very much of this. We looked at the live experience. And this problem became second order with respect to other issues that we had to face. But we know that while increasing the power, we need to
if you want to go higher power, LIGO.
Yeah.
And other than that, you've got meters, what are the mechanisms? You've got any mechanisms?
No, we have these actuators used for thermal compensation system, like 30 meters. But honestly, we haven't studied. Really, how to them in order to mitigate the risk of permanent.
Also, you can use the four magnets as we do the electrostatic actuator.
Sure.
We can use.
And also, the magnets on the base are used to. So there is a neutron damping and converter there.
Yeah, why is it? So you solve it.
It's a bug that became a feature.
Okay, and quickly, if I can ask the same question as Shinji, I've never actually seen you know, sort of a progression of plans from Kagra, but what are your time scales for getting to?
On October, we have just a meeting in July 4th in order to decide to make a consensus about the cover of the strike cover of schedule. According to the meeting, the start of commissioning is planned at the first quarter of 2019. And maybe the hopefully we will obtain the target NTP in 2012 or something. 2022, sorry.
Good. And is that just sort of a proclamation that we're going to get there, or is there a sort of staged commissioning that you know that you need to do to get to design sensitivity?
Yeah, we have three stages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. All right. Somebody else had a question. Sati had a question, and then we'll move on to the next. He's way over here. It's a very nice topic.
It's with regard to the low frequency, high frequency discussion that was taking place. I think now that we know why the black holes exist, low frequency should be the priority as far as I can see. But that also pays for binary neutron stars because we can measure parameters better, signals last longer. So if there is a choice between low and high frequency, I don't know if there is one. I think improving the low frequency part, not worrying about very high powers of lasers.
Good, and that actually leads to the next topic. Go ahead, Danielle, but I'm going to cue Salvo up here because I'm going to ask you this question.
I think the important thing here, the question from the physics point of view, do we care about 100 solar mass black holes? Because below 30 solar mass black holes, we don't really know what kind of spiral it is for detecting it through the optics. The equation state of neutron stars necessarily, but if you improve 80 hertz, 100 hertz, you get a basic nearly up to 30 solar mass. Exactly. So the equation is done. Is there anything out there?
Well,
100 solar mass?
We have 60,
oh,
we have 60 solar mass.
So to improve upper designs, you can get lower frequency to the higher approach. Especially because now that we know heavy black holes exist, how heavy could they be by this time?
I think that's an interesting scientific question.
Yeah, so I do want to bring back the discovery what it has done and reprioritize what it can do.
Okay, good. That's a segue into the next topic, which is exactly this. All right, based on what we've learned, and Salvo gave a nice, very nice talk this morning, is there anything coming science that's going to influence the way we rethink the next 5 years? And I think we've touched on that a little bit, but I want to ask Salvo first. So you bring the microphone down here.
I mean,
is there, knowing what you know now, is there anything you would be doing different than what you heard this morning, for example, for commissioning for A+?
And well, for commissioning for the near future, as everyone just said, we should prioritize low frequencies. And in the document that you were mentioning earlier today, there is a projected O2 sensitivity, which is not the one you just showed. It has been recalibrated with what we know we add in O1. And you see that the low frequency between O1 and O2 is basically the same. And by low, I mean up to 80 Hz or something like this. And this means that we, in terms of, you know, if we got GW5914 again, we would get it with a very similar SNR. So, you know, it's nice, not complaining, but it's not what you showed. Yeah, you know, yeah, I start liking this thing, okay. And in terms of, you know, farther away than O2, well, this is really, I don't have a different opinion that what was expressed. We know we love a lot of binary black holes, for sure. And these come with a quite long series of interesting questions. like the one that Satya just mentioned. And I would like to emphasize again what Satya said about the low frequency being a win-win, no matter what your signal is. If it's a binary black hole, it's evident. If it's a binary neutron star, you will have way more cycles. So, you know, the parameters which enter at the positronium series quite early, like the churn mass, some test of GR parameters, will get much better. And we saw this with the Boxing Day event. If you compare what we could do in terms of estimation of parameters for the Boxing Day event and GW5914, you would see that for some parameters, we actually did comparable in spite of the fact that the SNR was a factor of two worse. And the reason is because it was a much longer signal. Okay, so the low frequency, it's critical. You know, and after that, in 5 years time scale, it really depends, I guess, on what we learn in the meantime.
So it's a three solar mass binary neutron star.
You know, and Ray obviously made a very good point. I think it was Ray. To learn stuff like equation of state, you want to be at, you know, to make it better at higher frequency. So for detection and some parameter estimation, yes, up to 800 hertz is enough, probably. But, you know, if you want to do post-merger physics or whatever, you need to go later on. And if I can take the occasion, you already put Giovanni on the spot. Because if you actually plot the Lagrange Virgo curve on the same axis, you will see that Virgo right now in the, this prospected, you know, evolution, those significantly worse in, you know, in the region which is, would be interesting for binary black hole. So if binary black hole, suppose, let me be very negative for a second, it's everything we're going to get in the next few years. Is there any way this that could be changed, or is it just built in the hardware?
It's been leading wing.
I think
when we submitted the proposal to the planning agency, we were using a very pessimistic model for thermal models. And the reason was that, first, the when we had tried silica suspension in Virgo Plus, we had not been able to reach target sensitivity at low frequency. That was, we are almost sure that was not limited by thermal noise. But anyway, that sensitivity had not been demonstrated. So we were very careful with simulations. Moreover, we knew by experience that commissioning of the low frequency was very challenging from a large number of technical noises, which are hardly modeled. And so there was, we thought that it would have been reasonable to add some way to noise in the curve, but we were not able to. So it is, in that sense, the contribution of these noises could be compensated by worse contribution to non noise. Honestly, after that, we have published a CQG paper on the advanced laser detector together with LIGO, and in that paper, we have changed the curve. And we have a curve with a much better modeling both of suspension thermal noise and also Newtonian noise, so it's more realistic. And in fact, the ranges for binary black holes, computing the curves, are better as well. Okay. So, but now in the observing scenario paper, this is.
Yeah, it's already been documented.
Probably for the update.
Matt, in the DCC, you have this curve or you have that curve for Virgo? You don't know. Okay, we should check this.
But are the technical
ones for the official card that is still a little bit of one? So it's a contribution to the collaboration. The old one was also affected by the problem, by the not the error. The fact that when we submitted this card at the final constitution, there was no model for the new suspension, and so we used a different model to test it for sure. So, in the low frequency, the expected sensitivity is really bad at the moment.
Have the technical noise sources been designed for this one or the new noise sources?
Brian, give a lot of the movement. Repeat the question, please.
And this is just like a thing for presentation.
Yeah,
it's not the real world. And the real
it's a strong.
The real noise sources that are like
MAGLA is now a factor of 500 as well. And even though the noise sources were designed to be lower than the kind of plot, but I wonder what the advanced control plan for making the technical noise sources compatible with the new.
The requirement for the requirement on technical noises for the sensitivity of the phase one of one stability was be a factor 10 factor in this one, which in principle should fulfill, should meet the sensitivity requirement for the new one.
Equal to
it.
Equal to the new one.
A bit better than the new one. The new one is not a factor. There is also the new
so, I think I heard a pretty strong statement from Solomon that low frequencies really have a lot of attention.
Yes, Ms. Priestley, with what we know now, tomorrow, and maybe
you might have a sure. Politics is one binding trouble, so I'm sure we'll change our whole world. Brian Royer.
Maybe just to follow up on your comment there, you know, I hear people saying that, oh, it's the noise in the bucket that determines the range of the binary black holes. And so we really need to focus on mystery noise around 17 GHz. And noise from, say, angular coupling from auxiliary degrees of freedom about 10 and 20 hertz, like it doesn't matter because it doesn't affect the range of the binary black holes. Would you agree or disagree?
No, it can affect parameter estimation though. So you may still get it, but your uncertainty in the masses can be much
but
worse.
We did that the stuff down like 10, 20, 30. Or
well, maybe not 10, but you know.
If you say low frequency, I my idea of low frequency is 30.
Well, I'll give you an idea. In the analysis, in the parameter estimation analysis we performed in 01, we started our likelihood calculation from 20 hertz. We didn't go any lower than that. And especially for the boxing event, which was a lower masses and hence longer, we saw some difference in the quality of parameters starting at 20 rather than 30. So, you know, if you can make that part of the frequency range better, you know, I would not complain. I would not say that it's, you know, it's not useless. I don't agree that everything you care about is 8 years or 9 years. That doesn't seem enough.
Colin first is
just need to know more about the floor frequency for at least to be around 20 hertz. I mean, to test if you want to like test the area near it, maybe independent estimates of the final mass and spin from pre-merger and post-merger. So if nature's kind to us and gives us, say, a 100 solar mass pH, where the ring down is like right around between 150 and 200 hertz, we still want to be able to get a fair amount of SNR from before the merger to be able to try and estimate the final mass and spin for both the early part independent of the later part.
Mm-hmm. Can I?
Satya and then Salvo.
I had two comments, but you know, one of them is beyond what we are discussing. So first, let me make the comment about the importance of low frequency is that for every factor of 2, going from 30 to 15, for instance, that's will buy you a factor of 6.5 in the length of the waveform. And square root of that is what the improvement is. But I wanted to come back, if there are questions with regard to the same topic, that's fine. But I wanted to, you know, you said beyond go to what adjustment. I think we need to have a strategy where if these detectors are going to be upgraded, you have to be mindful that they may be very variables. Such as super movie. And an upgrade that actually keeps at least 2 detectors in the network alive all the time.
That anticipates a question later on.
Yeah,
but that's fine. Sorry. That's okay. No, it's good. That's what discussions are for. So Mark, and then maybe we'll move on to the next topic. Sal, what do you want to respond to?
I just wanted to, again, this is related to this push for low frequencies, but it raises a question about this. You know, the presentation of these things in the past has always been in terms of what do we need to do in order to actually observe gravitational waves, and if we can observe them, how many sources will we have? And so that's where you get presented in terms of what's our distance reach and how many sources we have to. But the presentation is never in terms of, has not been, because there have been observations in the past, in terms of how accurately can we measure parameters and what science can we get out. And I think that's where all these comments about low frequency are coming in, that when you go from, say, O2 to O3, do you want to see still more black holes, or is it that the black holes you observe, you want to be able to measure more accurately? And maybe, I don't know how to best present that, but maybe that's something, the kind of metrics that could come in presentations in the future. It's not just numbers of events, but abilities to measure.
Sounds like another argument for this. So Matt, all right, since this is good discussion, Jonah, go ahead, Matt, and then we'll get Matt, and I think I saw somebody else.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Matt?
Can I just, everyone says low frequency, and this was mentioned earlier, let me just stress it. Everyone might have a different idea of what low frequency means. And if you happily toss around 10 hertz or 20 hertz or 30 hertz or 40 hertz, each of those numbers is hugely different in terms of the effort required, even the parameter point of view.
Yeah.
So if you think it's low frequency, could be 10 hertz, could be 20, could be 30, I don't know, but please just don't say anything because it makes a huge difference. If you mean 40 hertz and above, that's reasonable. You know, we can work on that. If you mean 10 hertz and above, it's not going to happen.
I think, right? So when I said low frequency, I meant for the GW15-1226, anything below 35 hertz, well, not much used in terms of measurability or
that depends on the sensitivity curve, right? It depends on what you have. The reason why 35 is because that's where the noise is.
Yeah, in that regard. If you can reach the same sensitivity at 20 hertz, that was at 35 hertz.
But that's impossible. You just look at the design.
Right, then that's
20 hertz sensitivity will never be as good as 30 hertz sensitivity. That's never as good as 80 hertz. Right, and the curve has a certain shape to it, it's limited by some fundamental noises. So if you're thinking, gee, if 20 hertz were as good as 100, this would be awesome.
You don't seem to have a level of spending sensitivity. What I mean by that is the accumulated signal to noise ratio over that many number of cycles, even though it's raising.
So I just made that plot to my computer just to make sure that the state has the best metrics correct. Yeah. But the peak in the integrand of your SMR that you're accumulating for these file sources is around 50 hertz for the design curve for your next cycle. Mm-hmm. And below that you're not winning as much anymore.
Well, so not for detection, but for a parameter estimation. You're getting a lot.
The fine point on this that I wanted to make is before you make statements like for parameter estimation, low frequency is important. Right, which could mean any number of things to any number of people. Like assign a number to that. Right, if you reach design sensitivity at 20 hertz and above, the parameter estimation is a factor of 2 better than if you reach design sensitivity at 30 hertz. Right, because the amount of work required for 20 hertz and 30 hertz is hugely different. Right, so you might be asking for a year worth of commissioning effort if you say. Yeah, I mean, for a particular thing. If you say it needs to be 15 hertz, it's a huge request, right? So please, before you make statements like this low frequency is important, like quantify it carefully, because it makes a big difference.
Decides the frequency of the internal estimation.
John, Joe, you had a quick question, and I really do want to get on to the other slides here, so we'll try and wrap this up. That's okay.
So, I was looking at your question here, Dave. Should we be rethinking our plans for the next 5 years? And I'm immediately thinking about the very nice A-plus proposal that might be. And what I'm wondering is if the A-plus proposal is just as good, if it shifts later by 6 months or a year. And when I'm looking at things like, well, the Virgo timeline, Virgo gets to, I know that's a straw man, but it's a straw man. Virgo gets to design sensitivity in 2021. And that's right when we go offline for the A-plus upgrade. Advanced LIGO gets to design sensitivity in 2019, but maybe that slips by 6 months. It seems to me that the moment that we have the interferometer that we've been chasing for decades, we take it offline. So I wonder if the fact that we're making observations, I wonder if there's, not trade-offs of doing the A-plus, because it sounds great, but I wonder if there's trade-offs on when we when we set that timing from.
I think what you mean is we should do it faster.
I have a thought on that, that maybe it's not like spoiling, I think it's so bad.
Lisa, whenever I'm stealing your thunder, just say, thunder.
All of that.
I'm trying not to. So, well, good, then we'll have the expert update. All right, so I want to, it's a nice segue into the next thing, which is, we heard from Mike a pretty detailed plan for A+.
Yeah, quick correction, it's the right seat at all. I think you're still with the eye, dude.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask what I consider to be an obvious question, and I think I know the answer, but I want to make sure everybody else weighs in. Calling it the right seat at all plan, did it make sense when you rolled it, is there anything here that you would see or do differently? In other words, in terms of the technical, what you're going to achieve, how long it's going to take, the, I'll call it numerical, that you need for coding, so I think that's the one part of it that is a little bit sort of under the pin. Zabi?
So there are two kinds of discoveries, one which affects only us, and the other change the course of people outside of our collaboration. Yeah. So people are more investing money in projects which change everybody. Yeah. So in a sense, identifying this is where we can affect others might be a sensible way to private things. Second, if you do something on an accelerated scale, it costs non-linearly more. It's way more expensive than if you do it solely.
So I'm trying to get tangent. So with regard to the first point, are you saying that, for example, astronomers might want to weigh in on what we're doing here? And I'm just trying to get a better sense of what you're trying to say.
Depends on what kind of discovery you make. Sometimes it's astrophysicists, sometimes it's quantum matter physicists, sometimes it's industry. So sometimes you affect other things,
some
technical.
Can I take
this? Yeah, actually, we'll solve it.
Yeah, if I can say something about the timeline and of going offline for 2 years and so on.
Yeah,
and so
that's I think an interesting question. I don't want to steal this.
Yeah,
the good news is that we'll have this discussion and then we'll have it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And
okay. So if I believe the curves I've been using, which are in the CC, so with this caveat, I've been playing with this morning, if I get a Kagra Virgo network, a design sensitivity with that design, and I focus on black hole binary from 10 to 50 solar masses, with a network of Kagra and Virgo design, I get a distribution of sources redshift, which is slightly worse than what we can get with the LIGO
three.
Okay. So this we should several caveats. I may have done something wrong, but I don't think so right now. Because looking at the low frequency makes sense that it's worse. But these kind of things I think we should pay a lot of attention because we risk to go backward for a pretty long time.
Yeah.
Now O3 is gonna be nice, we're gonna have auto detection, but I don't know if psychologically is what we want to do.
So I want, since Mike made a pretty strong statement about this question, saying that he thought this was the only way to go, you want to defend that statement?
Well, you can make a lot of scenarios, about whether you want to, first of all, predictions about where Virgo is at that point. If you take at face value what we have for the moment and you accept the kind of optimistic schedule I have, then I think this is all that makes sense. The best thing to do, if you have a good probability of increasing your range, is to do it impulsively and all at once and accept the downtime, but make it as short as possible. There's in another scenario, if Virgo was in comparable sensitivity, or if LIGO India was also available and everything, you could make different choices. But under what look like the most probable conditions, I don't think it's defensible to sequence the two best detectors. That's all.
I can say these are when I made a lot of this yesterday. And from the point of view of volume of time in your grand, the sequencing is not.
That's a good
Basically, using the limited by your second best detector. So if you take the two best and sequence them, you automatically lose.
Good. All right, and now actually, I've asked this question before, and I'll probably ask it again in the next meeting that we're in. But what are the upgrades, sensitivity enhancements plan for Virgo and for Hydra? I mean, I know you guys are thinking about squeezing, but have you gotten to the point where you're thinking about B plus or whatever you want to call it?
I have a couple of slides at least for the pattern.
Okay, great, good, and we'll hold on for that. And I asked you this in Elba. You're still focusing on the treatment. Okay, all right, good. Okay, anything else on this topic?
I wonder if the focus of this B plus is wrong, because I can imagine.
Can you give them a mic, because there are people in Teams speak there.
It's not too much. I imagine what is wonder, what it is the ice. That's good. I don't think this is true, but you could imagine that we have three or four detections, and you can use them to choose, you can basically classify your population model and find out what else is out there. There's only two theories of black hole generation, you can say, based on the fact that we've seen three things, it must mean there's a huge population of 200 solar mass black holes. In which case, this plan, which the right sees a different plan. I agree with it, it would be under. The right to Tucker plan sort of neglects the low 30 Earth side, or it's not intended to really do anything special there besides assume that we've already hit the fundamental facility limits. And I wonder if today we should be doing something below 30 Earths based on our estimates of what the population might be. So it's stuff that would not be helped by 80 to 150. Stuff would be heavy black hole that merge at 30 Earths.
So, Newtonian Mars cancellation?
No, that's kind of. We're 50 times worse than that. Newtonian noise is what I'm going to do when I'm retired. What are we going to do between now and 2025? That's a fine plan. But in the real world, they're not limited by that stuff right now. And if that's a real population we should go after, you know, it's not just, oh, it's technical, no, it's not really about that. It's a real thing that perhaps we should go after, but if there's nothing out there, as Matt was saying, it would be a huge expenditure of effort to try to
do something,
to try to get a factor of 100 noise from that temperature if there's nothing out there.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we don't have any, as far as I know, any observational evidence for a black hole of the mass that would be required to collect a third tier.
Okay. All right. Any more on
you want to go to space?
No.
What do you want?
I think it might be a naive question, but if you look at the few detections we have, there doesn't seem to be enough weak non-detections. Maybe that's wrong, but that's my impression. Is there anything we can do with the commission to try to shed any light on that problem?
You're saying that the foreground model over predicts strong signals? Is that true?
That's not true.
That's what I thought too.
So our models do agree with what we measure.
Well, GW 1015 or 914 is still an outlier. Mm-hmm.
I know, but
it was
in the paper.
Yeah, it was in the BBH paper.
Yeah, the BBH paper. The foreground model was.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know very little about data analysis, but it was in the discovery paper with that precise question they asked, is this consistent with everything that we need? And with so few events, you can't rule out anything. First of all, that was one event. So right now, there's nothing inconsistent in one of these things. In my understanding.
Okay. Optical coatings. So first is just the summary of a statement. You know, I took Mike's statement saying, well, CTN test mass is ready for installation by 2021. And that includes Pathfinder, things like that. And I'll start with Marty since he gave the presentation. Given what we know, how confident are we that this can be achieved, assuming that we're not limited by funding? Maybe are we limited by funding? Are we limited by ideas and things like that? I realize this is a big and woolly question, but you made the point. You said, 18 months is not a lot of time to do a complicated materials physics problem. So given that, we've raised this, where do you put your money? Do you put it all in high temperature deposition?
Well, if we're not money limited and put all our money on something, I think that means we're putting a lot of money on something, right? So I think you need to narrow the boundary conditions a little bit, but if you speak with new money coming online and say here, just pick representative amount of times, it can't have a ton of impact on an 18-month decision.
Right. So,
so that means it's the existing groups doing intensive work already, GEO, Gang, Glasgow, University of Western Scotland, to the extent of stuff you're ramping up at LIGO Lab could have an impact on an 18-month decision point. But money starting in a year has 6 months.
Yeah,
also an 8-month decision point, and that would be a terrific stroke of luck.
Okay, but to the earlier question, I mean, this seems a more promising. We've been sort of walking around in the coding thermal desert for 10 years, right? And these are the first ideas that I think I've heard, from my perspective, actually look like they might have some physical payoff rather than Edisonian model, which you call it, where you just throw dopants and material and
maybe high temperature. I think that statement is true. And what I also think the advent of molecular dynamic simulations that are starting to tie up with experiments, there's that old saying, and the year in the lab can save you a day in the library. And I think it's sort of the same thing with these simulations are now reaching the point where they can start to point even the, let's combine certain dopants with a certain host and try it even under conventional deposition. I think the ability to make useful such suggestions is dramatically greater than it was even a year ago. So I think that's rapidly coming online. But if I was going to do one thing, it would be the hot substrate.
Yeah, yes. Okay. So is the modeling now the bottleneck? I mean, it looks like the modeling is starting to pay off. But it's maybe computationally limited. We've been talking about this a lot, Sean. If there were more effort put into funding modeling and doing modeling, would that help?
Yeah, I of course can't speak for Haiping, right. But I think if I understood correctly, she felt that if she had additional students and more postdoc, you can sort of turn down loose on more parallel material systems to study. You know what I'm saying? There's a certain amount of refinement that has to go into these calculations. If I just plug in three numbers into an existing code and letting it run. And she said, well, I could do this and this with the current staffing, you could do this and this, we add more staff.
And I have to confess that I should know the answer to this, but I haven't followed this closely. Is Florida the only group that's actually really active in working in this in the LC
now? There's simulations.
Yeah.
Unless there's some geobugs that I don't know about.
We lost Rachel.
All right.
So basically, the answer to this question is yes. It's high paying and some. He's above. Yeah, but yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's the product. So, he's the product in class. He's the product of on the looking at the structural thing is better than what I think doesn't make sense to what I think, but looking at the actual structures and
there's
is that, yeah. Is a different thing.
Yeah, there's several people participating in the characterization of structure, and I think that's mostly important.
Yeah.
But in terms of the real modeling, what microdynamics work, as far as I know, it's like that for students and postdocs.
Okay. Greg?
I don't want to be a wet blanket, but I don't think this characterization of coding work over the last 10 years has just been kind of hunting around in the dark, getting nowhere. Suddenly, we have the light coming. I mean, there's a little bit of that going on. First of all, you know, I agree with Martin that if we can only put our money in one place, this hot substrate thing is looking pretty good. We don't know this is going to work out. But we've had theoretical guidance and direction before, and we followed up on it. The problem is it didn't work out. I mean, if I put 2 years into looking at this bulk and shear business, which, you know, the final word is not written on that, but the bottom line is that there's no magic coming out of it. And I mean, yeah, this is the hot idea of the moment. And I do think that we are reaching a point where the modeling and the structure work is starting to gel. That to me is what's happening here. Where exactly that leads us, we don't know.
I want to contextualize this a little bit as well. If you were looking at these results from more of a well, let's look what that group has been doing previous to this work.
Okay. Which group? Okay.
So this is Lou et al., right? Who came out with the work of silicon hot substrates. And you see it's very low loss. Now, if you look back to 1997, they had another very impressive result, and they were infusing amorphous silicon with hydrogen. That didn't work out because the hydrogen leaks out. But so what's happening between 1997 and 2014? This group is doing like a lot of coding groups. They are working on annealing, et cetera, to try and see how can we improve the loss. And they're not really getting the improvements that they would like to see. They are not getting down to the loss that they were getting with the hydrogen. And they built off of work that actually came out of organic coatings, which was done in 2007, but went mostly unnoticed until there was then some molecular dynamics modeling of this work that showed there's actually some theoretical modeling support that shows that this is actually a really dynamics that can be applied across the coding field. And then they picked up on it, my understanding. So I think it's important to recognize that the tools within the coding community for lowering the loss have been dopants and annealing. And that has very limited capabilities because you are limited in the amount of mobility you can add with annealing. You can add some, you can put yourself a little bit down on this energy scale. And this idea of using the heated substrates and low deposition rate really ups your mobility and makes, as Marty was talking about, this thin layer on the top of the coating that has very, very high mobility just find those states and call into them. And so I think it holds a lot of promise, but I think it's also, you have to see it within the context of how these ideas develop.
Let me ask her a quick comment, which is, it's not heated substrates alone that might contribute to making a high mobility surface layer. The notion of some combination of substrate temperature and ion beam assist and deposition rate. If I understand correctly, there are some quite recent promising results again from the Western Scotland folks about amorphous silicon and ion assist showing good elastic loss results as well. So I wouldn't cross that off as another tool that would also be a lot more easily incorporated into conventional coding systems than putting a toaster into the substrate open.
Yeah. And is there any reason to believe, just a priori, that, you know, heated deposition / dual ion beam / deposition rate slowing down works, that it would compromise the absorption or compromise the uniformity of it. Is there any couple?
I think there's an inherent reason that should happen, but obviously
you have to test the read. You have to air it.
Sure, something tank accommodate 400 degrees, and then you're a lot of parameters of that system are going to change, and they'd have to all be retweaked to make it work again, even if there was no chemical or physical reason why it should be different in terms of coating itself.
I mean, I'm not an expert coder, but my understanding is a lot of the absorption methods just don't give the coating as it develops time to accumulate junk. So the solution to the mechanical loss is to do it slow. I worry that there's a trade-off in absorption. But I mean, if both of those are fairly well understood, then we do the trade-off. If it's more of a crapshoot, who knows where that will be.
So that's kind of the function also just defining how clean a tank has to be.
Yeah,
or a certain deposition rate, right?
Our absorption is so much lower than all that. Kind of
yeah, and barring impurities, we've always seen that as you drive down the absorption and drive down the loss, if this is pushing up lower on the energy landscape, I would say that the naive assumption is that's also going to drive down absorption.
It is not pointing out also, it's just slowly coming to light now in LMA, that the big coater which provides the best loss, there the deposition rate is much lower than our smaller coater. And Stuart, Jeff was across last week, and I think Stuart at the last really got that out of him, that was the case.
That's good. Information for the moment. Okay, Ricardo, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be the naysayer, but as Matthias pointed out, there is always the risk of crystallization. And so that is what was the main mover ten years ago, which was the number of the alloying was another way that go back to Jean-Marie time. Incidentally, the nanom, the thin film of molten material on top or warm mobile material on top is something that Jean-Marie was talking with me almost 20 years ago. So we have to be very careful in giving up any of these options. Because if we re-encounter crystallization, then we will certainly have to find go back in alloying, and hopefully it works and it seems to be working in an area.
Okay, good. Last comments, and then we need, because we're coming up on the end of our time.
Just wondering to ask a different question. If you had to recode the Noptic now, what would we actually do? Would we do exactly the same thing, or is there something that we sure we can implement?
I think we do the same thing.
That's two things.
We would do the same thing. The coders have learned a lot from coding our optics. So they might end up being better in a technical sense because they have tweaked it. I mean, the later optics we coded are better than the coders. Can I just make a quick comment to go back to your coding slide? So you asked the question, how are we funding limited, idea limited, or what? I don't think there's any way we're idea limited. In fact, that's our biggest problem. There's just so many things to try, prioritizing is often a problem. But I want to suggest that really we're manpower limited, which is sort of a subset of funding, but it's slightly different.
It's got to be the right kind of people that are interested in material science problems to attack it. When you say manpower, it's not just eight people from the room.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a complicated question, and we should probably talk about it later when we have plans. But I thought that was actually a very important question you asked that didn't really get addressed.
Okay. All right, good. Okay, the last thing, very quickly. So we heard Ron talking about Voyager, and I guess a question quickly for Ron is, what do you think the main technology challenges are? You painted a picture that looked pretty easy. And we said, we're not even doing cryogenics, we're doing air conditioning.
So I think psychology probably is your presence, the stumbling block is so everyone should come to Pasadena and try to cool down yourself. You'll come away a little bit. And no, I think really there's just like I said, coding absorption, you know, it's sort of like make it right. So based on the step on the Boltzmann constant, there's finally there's only so much you can absorb, and it doesn't make any sense anymore. So if the coding absorption doesn't make it, then this all actually doesn't make any sense. But you know, as maybe you can notice in the coding layer design, silica is the main thermal noise contributor. Silica, silicon, and at a room temperature, it doesn't help us that much to improve the loss of silica. It seems to me like improving understanding silica, why is there a factor of 10 to the 8 difference, and then 7 of this difference in mechanical Q between thin film and wall. It's like a classic physics problem that we solve it. That this kind of cryo coding almost bottomless, top way to drive it. Maybe we'll fall off the bottom. But it's not yet totally proven that the big silicon substrates will work out for us. So I think one of the points of this test bed would be, I think this is too often forget about this big challenge what we're suffering from now. It used to be that measuring ultra low phase noise at 100 Hz was the topic of the PhD thesis back in the 1800s. But that's only been done on silica. And we don't yet know that you can get 10 to the minus 10 or 11 radians at 100 Hz. Silicon, any crystal that can silicon also. And I sort of hesitate, I mean, looking at what Howard Stage and Brian. I just think I'm not sure that I want to get into that kind of thing. That's so challenging to do, expect if you haven't made a dedicated test that to exactly measure that. But how can we have confidence that that's going to work out for us unless we have a demonstration of that?
Right, so we need a very young, energetic person to work with Ron.
Let me just sort of stress that in this graphic way. Graphic. So, mean I have slides. Which means, imagine that Ron came to you and said, I want you to tear out everything you have in your wonderful environment that's operating through the great design keyboards and install a bunch of silicon 2 micron stuff that you've never built an environment out before. Would you do that? Like even it sounded very convincing, and these little reference cavity was working perfectly, and it seemed all okay. No one's going to do that, right? So I think having this prototype to demonstrate that at least on a 10-meter, 40-meter scale, you can make something that works as a recycled microsystem. It's critical just in believing this thing can be installed in a large environment. I don't think anything can tear out A+ in a contract from untested silicon.
Put that way, right? who can argue with you? But let me come back to the question of big silicon test masses. I mean, what do we need to know to be able to convince ourselves? I mean, you showed this wonderful picture of you sitting next to this modified Tchaikovsky bowl of silicon. Is it just cutting it and making some measurements, or
this?
No, it's terrible. We don't have a test bed to test it. Ideally, we just make a bunch of tabletop materials properties measurements and absorption and scattering and so on, like what we're doing. We have gotten some gigantic pieces from them, looking at chunks of it for all of the properties you can imagine. But, Marty has given us a couple years ago a list of all kinds of nonlinear phenomena. Try to use a semiconductor as a raw signal. But in the end, it's hard to convince myself that we're going to get, if we put kilowatts of power into an IBM,
there's not going to be excess space for applications using some 22nd or third order coupling coefficient, DNB charge.
Well, or homogeneity. I mean, that's the thing that I would really worry about.
Yeah. I mean, there is some non homogeneity, which is regularly distributed, which the manufacturer told us about, and in fact, has been measured as and that's in absorption. But what is that? You know, they're using a technique that only they use this. And what does it do to, you know, the techniques that they use to reduce the precarrier density of buildings and all those other things? We'll know more as time goes on. Eventually, we'll have to do this in sort of phase and
stuff. So it's not doing this, depending on a broader phase and phase and path on to the store company. Okay, 5 minutes over, I'm going to stop on just so bad. I guess we're done with transition to the next.
Yeah.
You're the moderator for the next.
Yeah.